Hello, welcome to this edition of the Bearcats Blogcast. My name is Scott, joined, as always, by Chris Baines. How's it going, Chris?
Great, Scott. UC is 3-0 for the first time since, I think, 2012. They're coming off a shellacking of Alabama A&M, one that they won by 63-7 that really wasn't ever in doubt by, like, midway through the first quarter. They probably could have put up 100, but Fickell wisely called up the dogs pretty early, like right around the second quarter is when he started to sub in some second teamers. I mean, it kind of makes sense. They were up like 28-0 after the first, 35-0 after like a few minutes into the second. Really went as scripted. I mean, what are your thoughts on the game?
I mean, obviously, when like you play a team like Alabama A&M, you want to just blow them out of the water. And that's exactly what happened. Like, as you mentioned, 28-0 after the first quarter. Like, never in doubt. They were able to get pretty much every young guy that you wanted to see, like, get some action, like, into the game. And a lot of them got significant action. Like, we both talked about, like, wanting to see, like, Ritter put the ball in the air. And he put the ball in the air pretty successfully. We wanted to see Bryant. He played, what, a few drives. He got some nice run. Like, we saw pretty much everybody, and everybody did really well. Like, UC almost had 800 yards. It was just a great offensive performance. 400 rushing yards. It's like, that's the last time UC did that. That was just, like, pure domination on both sides.
Yeah, I think someone tweeted out they haven't crossed the 400-yard mark since, like, the late 90s, which, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, I thought they were running some kind of, like, veer pitch offense at that point. Like, definitely very run-heavy at that point. I mean, not the passing attack that we've seen in recent years, but it's been a while since they put up that much on the ground. And they weren't just doing it with Michael Warren. Like, Charles McClellan had a big game. Tavion Thomas had a big game. Desmond Ritter ran the ball pretty well on the ground. I mean, they did really whatever they wanted to do offensively. Michael Warren was third in yards on the ground with 78. Tavion Thomas had 141. Charles McClellan had 121. I mean, it was a blowout after the first quarter, so they got a lot of run on Saturday. But no matter how often or no matter who was running the ball, they were still reeling off tons and tons of yards. I mean, average 7.4 yards per carry on the ground. I mean, did whatever they wanted to do to Alabama and A&M on the ground.
55 carries, and they only lost 23 yards. Just, like, complete domination up front. And, like, the backs, like, we were, like, kind of worried about Michael Warren's touches, and it seemed like they were, too, because he was really reined in. Like, he didn't need to go wild. He only had 6 carries, and he got 78 yards. But, like, Tavion Thomas looked really great. And so did McClellan, like, his first action of the season, and he, like, pops off, like, 7.5 yards a carry. That's, like, that depth that we were talking about, like, really showed up in the backfield. And you have to feel a little bit better about it with Doak's still out.
Yeah, I think the script coming into that game, Dembrock, and, well, Fickell mentioned it after the Miami game. You know, he called out Khalil Lewis as, you know, not having, and I don't remember if it was a response to a question or whatever, but Khalil Lewis, UC's number one receiver, only has like a catch or two on the season. But he made it a point to call out to the entire team and show 5 highlights of Khalil Lewis, you know, blocking, running down on special teams and forcing fair catches, running down special teams and forcing tackles as soon as the guy catches it. You know, the first couple of games of the season we were talking about, it was UCLA. They probably didn't want to let Ritter air it out too much because that's his first ever college football game. Then week two, they have a monsoon, so they can't really air it out that much anyways. But, you know, Fickell, I think Fickell and Dembrock kind of came together and said, you know we can run the ball. Let's get these receivers involved a little more and just see what they can do. And, hell, we saw what they freaking can do. Khalil Lewis streaked down the field on a skinny post. the first play in like the second quarter and scored a touchdown, like 70 yards, something like that. I think you mentioned before the game, or before we got on the podcast, Thomas Geddes had that catch against the defender's helmet in the end zone. Jason Jackson had 6 catches for 80 yards. Like, they were flying all over that secondary. And to Alabama's A&M credit, I mean, they knew they were overmatched defensively, so they played a soft zone. They knew that they couldn't match up one-on-one against the receivers. Given that, UC had no problem picking apart that soft zone coverage.
Yeah, definitely. And it was a field day for pretty much everybody. Like you mentioned, Lewis, like 61-yard touchdown, like wide open. But Gavis, like that great catch. Like DeGura had like another big play. Like this is a like transformation. It's like a solid receiving tight end. It's been pretty great because like that was even a hole in UC's game the last couple of years, after like obvious sustained success with like all the tight ends they put in the NFL in the early 2000s. It was like really good to see like the receivers like finally break out. And like Jayshon Jackson, as you mentioned, had like a pretty big game, like kind of out of nowhere.
Yeah, he definitely, I mean, him coming out of the slot exploited that soft zone more than anybody else. I mean, even deep into the third quarter, Ben Bryant was hitting him for some pretty solid gains. Yeah, Hayden Moore came in and his first pass was Jayshon Jackson over the middle. To talk about some of the true freshmen that have set up this year, I mean, Jayshon Jackson's got to be one of the highlight reels. Like, I am very excited to see what this team can look, this receiver core can look like with him, like, spearheading it out of the slot. And it's just, you know, we don't really have much to say about this team when they win 63-7, but, you know, no one got injured. Everyone got in the game. I think Fickell mentioned they played something like 30 total freshmen. They had like 70 total players got into the game on Saturday. A lot of guys got reps that might see red shirts later in the year. But, you know, Ben Bryant in particular, he's going to probably take that experience and learn from it going into next season. I don't know, Scott. It was kind of like a preseason football game. You know, with preseason games, they typically have scripted amounts of plays that they're going to run. They don't really they open it up to a degree. I mean, UC definitely opened it up on Saturday, but they wanted to get Desmond Ridder in. They wanted to get Hayden Moore some playing time. They wanted to get Sopko and Bryant in, and those guys basically split each of the quarters in the game and were productive. And same thing for the running back core. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, they're 3-0, and they blew out an Alabama A&M team that was picked 5th in their division in the SWAC, and it all went great.
That seemed like so rare, like the last few years, for something to go to plan for you. Like you like playing out these like money games, so like you blow the team out, everybody gets experience. And like we mentioned last week, and like again, like today, you just did, with like the new redshirt rule. Like this game was so important to get so many different guys like real game action, and we probably won't see a lot of like the guys play that had big moments. But they're like at the same time, it's like you have to get those guys experience, and what better time than the home opener against a team that's really bad. And, like, you can't really come up with too many negatives from this game either. Because Thomas fumbled a couple of times. Like, that was, like, really it. They threw a pick. But, like, that happens. Like, I'm not really too worried about with anything that came from this game.
Yeah, and, like, to your point, I mean, the last couple of years, they struggled to beat their FCS opponent. And can you imagine? Yes, like on Saturday, if UC's only up like 7 at halftime, and we still have the first team offense in there, and guys like Bryant and Tavion Thomas can't get in there to get reps, like that would be devastating. But I mean, everything went as scripted. The first teamers stayed in there for basically the first quarter, at least offensively. I know the defense stayed in there quite a bit longer, especially Brian Wright. I don't know why he was playing in the third quarter, but whatever. But it gave a lot of younger guys reps, and some of those guys will still take red shirts at the end of the year. But when we're talking about turning around this football team, and I think we definitely can agree that turnaround is more than completed, I mean, who knows what they're going to do next season with all these, with all that knowledge and information under their belts going into year three in the Fickle era. I don't know what else to say about this game, Scott. What we've been recording for what, like 7 minutes, something like that. What else do we have to say?
I don't really know. Like, it was just such a dominant blowout that, like, it's hard to really keep going over how amazing they were.
Like, we can talk about the defense, but it's like they just kept churning through Alabama and A&M's offensive line like they did Miami, Ohio, and UCLA. It's like just more of the same dominance from the defense, right?
But only 8 first downs given up. And like 2 of those were by penalty. Alabama A&M ran for under 2 yards a carry. Like, they threw for under 5 yards an attempt. I mean, just like completely overmatched on that side of the ball.
Which is what we expect, yeah.
I guess you could say the punt returns were bad. But they only had 3 punt returns.
Yeah, I mean, if we're going to be nitpicky.
We have to be nitpicky to find any type of negative. Like, 7-9 on third down. Like, just 6-6 in the red zone with all touchdowns. I mean, I really don't know, like, what negative you could come away with from this game.
I mean, yeah, like 7.4 yards per rush. It's 15.8 yards per completion. 741 yards of total. I mean, yeah, it was just dominance, you know, end to end. And really, I mean, that's just comforting that we can, like you've been talking about, it's comforting they've been, they were able to do that once again after struggling against MCS opponents recently. Go ahead.
James Smith did kick a touchback, so, I mean, what a negative mark on his career.
That is true, yeah. I mean, and, you know, we didn't really see enough of James Smith. I enjoy watching his punts. I don't know about you, but it's kind of fun watching the ball, like, hang, and then, like, the returner is just sitting there waiting for it, and all of a sudden he has 3 Bearcats around him, and he can't do dick with it. It's kind of refreshing.
Yeah, it definitely is. Yeah, if we like jump to the punt game like that fast, I don't really know how much else there is to cover about this one. Like, Michael Warren, nearly 100 yards again, and like, what, like 7 touches. Like, his season's been like really remarkable. Like, we thought like he would progress, but like, I'm really surprised like how much he turned into like a all-conference back, at least like for the quarter mark of the season.
Yeah, and we're not even talking about, I mean, he's technically the number 2 running back. I mean, Jared Doakes hasn't even suited up this season. And I can't imagine what they're going to look like together when you have that tandem running behind that offensive line.
And that is going to be really interesting to see how they mix that, because it seemed like last year Doakes was more like the main back. It has to be Warren until like he starts to like decline statistically, don't you think?
I would say, like, I don't know when Doakes is going to be back. It sounds like he might be back this Saturday. Maybe. I mean, you never know. I would think that they still run out Warren to start and then just kind of sprinkle Doakes in just to get him some run and just make sure that you know, he can still run the ball and that injury isn't going to creep up and hurt him. I still think by the end of the, by, like, if Doakes is healthy in a few weeks and they're basically, you know, they're as healthy as he's going to get, I still think they split time, but I don't know who's going to actually, like, take the reps, like, most of the reps.
It seems like even if they split time, it would be, like, 60-30 at worst, like, because they ran pretty even, like, all of last year.
Yeah.
And it's turning out to be, like, a good thing to have is like, oh, which one of your good running backs do you give the ball to the most?
Yeah, and then, like, if, one of them goes down, you have confidence in McClelland and Thomas behind them, if you need to go to them. It's, you know, we were looking at some of the, we were talking about recruiting, like, earlier in the year before we kind of went on our 4-month break, and Fickle's loading up on running backs, or he loaded up on running backs last year. He's loading up on running backs in the 2019 class. I mean, we haven't even talked about Ryan Montgomery, who's, I assume, taking a redshirt this year. And, I mean, this is the advantage of having that deep running back core. I mean, you never know who's going to get injured, and you don't know who's going to actually develop, you know, in the college system. But it's just nice to have that talent to go to if they need to go to it. Like, let's say Warren and Doakes go down with an injury this year. You know, God forbid. You know, McClellan and Thomas should be fine. I mean, you're taking a step back with them, but I mean, they should be productive on the ground if evidence has shown us anything.
Yeah, and like with this game, they both got like major experience, like carrying the ball like double digit times,
and yeah,
like running free pretty much like every time they touch the ball. And they both got in the end zone, so I mean, like you would have confidence if like things came to that, like Warren gets hurt against Ohio. You have to lean on like the reserves. So it was like another good reason like why this game like happened. And where it took place too, like just seemed like it was even better. Because if like this was the opener, it's like who knows like how sold you are on like some of this stuff. But like after we've seen like solid, steady progress the first 2 weeks, to like have a game like this where you can get everybody action and like your starters look great. Yeah, it's like a good time for everybody.
Yeah, and I kind of posed a question on Twitter, I think, yesterday. I mean, Saturday wasn't a litmus test, obviously. I mean, they blew them out comfortably. Miami, Ohio, and UCLA aren't the teams we thought they were. Is it, I mean, what's the litmus test? You know, like, we know this team has a good defense, but how good are they? We know this team has a solid running game, but, you know, they haven't really been tested too extensively this year. I mean, where is the litmus test this season? Or should we even worry about it?
That's a fair question. I would say at this point, we don't really have to worry about it. But then I guess, like, once you go to Temple, it's like, wouldn't that be it? Like a traditionally tough opponent they haven't beaten in a few years?
I think that makes sense. I mean, maybe Ohio this week. I'm kind of leaning towards Toledo. Or not Toledo, Temple. I mean, Temple looked solid last week. I mean, they had a fucking beat Maryland. Who beat Texas? Who beat USC? I don't want to do the transit of properties, but Temple looked a lot better last week than they've looked all season. I mean, it looks like they finally figured out what they're doing on both sides of the ball. Yeah, it seems like Temple, but then, like, to your point, it kind of doesn't really matter, right?
Yeah, because if, like, we're just looking for, like, how good they are, by the time, like, we could figure that out, they could, like, be, like, what, like, 6-0 or 7-0?
Right.
Like, playing, like, the toughest teams on their schedule. And, like, by that point, it's, like, you're kind of good or you're not good already.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you kind of, yeah, if this is, like, week one and we're talking Alabama A&M, I mean, we could probably make a lot of assumptions about this team that might not necessarily be true. But now that we're in week three and the front seven has continued to churn through offenses, the running game is still good, the passing game looked great against Alabama A&M, there might be still a few questions about it, but it probably doesn't really matter what the litmus test is because we kind of understand what this team is. And you know, they might go up against a better offense that tests the defense a lot more. They might get that this Saturday. They might get a defensive line that gets in the backfield and pressures Desmond Ridder and forces him to make mistakes. But, you know, it just is what it is. You know, UC might not be the best team they might not be the best team on Cincinnati's schedule. But, you know, we just have to kind of cross that bridge when we get to it.
And like, I think if you were like looking for like definitive answers, it's like with the passing game, like it would have to be this game against Ohio, just based on what Virginia did to him. Like Bryce Perkins was like 25 of 30, like for nearly 400 yards and 3 touchdowns. It's like their defense can be exploited, and like Ridder had a nice game, like 20 yards an attempt. and just like threw all over him. But it was like Alabama A&M, like that caveat comes in. It's like we really haven't seen the passing game against like anybody good. And like as you mentioned, like they were tentative against UCLA, and like they couldn't throw the ball against Miami really. And like Alabama A&M was Alabama A&M, where like they just like blew coverages and like UC's players were just a lot better. It's like a team like a step up in talent where you've already seen that team get thrown on like pretty well. Like albeit in a weird situation where they played like in Vanderbilt. But like at the same time, it's like Ohio is like a pretty decent MAC team. So like, it's a big challenge there. And like with the schedule coming up, like against like UConn and Tulane, like it would be interesting to see what they could do through the air in this one.
Yeah, Ohio is a mess defensively. Where do you even like start with them? So overall, Ohio, they're S&P Plus, they're a worse team than Miami or UCLA. They are the second worst team on UC schedule projected to be. UConn is the worst at 129. But then I mean, their freaking defense is third to last according to S&P. They're 129th in college football in total defense, last in passing defense, 81st in rushing defense, and 116th in scoring defense. Like, that defense is not good. And if I'm like Ohio, like I get that they're a pick to win the MAC East, and they could very well do that, but they're going to be winning games like in the 50s and 60s. Like they're going to have to score that many points if that defense is as bad as it's been this season.
And like they had no answers for Virginia at all. Like 12-point yards a completion, like 5.6 yards of rush. Virginia did pretty much whatever they wanted to Ohio on the ground. Like Ohio, even in their win against Howard, gave up 32 points. So like the big plays are definitely there on offense. And like Ohio has shown that they can move the ball, they can score. So it's like a test for the defense as well. Because you can't take them too lightly. Because they could put up points. They score 30 plus in their first two games.
Yeah, I don't like Ohio's defense. So their offense, they're ranked 38th in S&P. They're averaging about 5 touchdowns a game. I definitely the strength of the offense, but I don't know what to make of their offense because the only real test this year was Virginia, which is 75th in S&P defense. And they did it. I mean, their handling of the quarterback situation kind of doesn't make sense to me. Like, so Nathan Rourke was their starter against Howard, but he got benched because he was doing nothing offensively. They bring in Quentin Maxwell, and he saves him from an upset and beats Howard 38-32. Then against Virginia, he goes back to Rourke. I don't know. I mean, Frank Solich knows more about football, or could forget more about football than I could ever know, but that I think their offense is a little suspect. And especially when you look at their offensive line, they've allowed 2.5 sacks per game this year. I mean, that's 95th in college football. Like, if you're a top 50 offense, you shouldn't be giving up 2.5 sacks per game. I don't know, Scott. I think their offense is a little overrated.
Yeah, very well could it very well could be. It's like some of their points against Virginia were like in garbage time. Stay that garbage time in that one started early. They were down like 35-7 before they really started scoring.
And that's like the thing is like their defense is so terrible that their offense just has to air it out constantly. And yeah, you're going to put up a lot of points. Like look at what UC did. What was it? Was it 2015? I want to say. Let's go back. Let's take a little ride through history. What was Gunnar Kiel's like official last season? Was that 2016? Something like that.
I think it was 2015.
2015 or 2016? Whatever, 2015. They scored points in bunches, right? But they did so like the USF game where they lost 65 to frickin' 27. I mean, they put up a decent amount of yards, but like the defense was just so horrible that the, you know, the offense was essentially padding stats, and just raising their numbers in that respect. Like, I don't know. I definitely think that this Ohio offense is going to test UC more than any other offense they face this year. No doubt about it. But man, their offensive line is suspect, and really plays into UC's strength on the front seven. But I don't know if that defense is going to be strong enough to hold back a UC offense that has a lot of options. I don't know. Like beginning of the season, we thought this was going to be one of the toughest pick games on the schedule, and it could very well be, especially in terms of like facing an offense that should score more points on UC than any other team up to this point. But I don't know if UC doesn't win this one and win this one by a couple of touchdowns.
Yeah, Ohio like doesn't nearly look as formidable as they did on paper. It's like you can't like play Howard and then like barely beat them and then like get blown out by Virginia. They did make that game like a 10-point game in the third quarter, but still like they got beat pretty handily.
And it wasn't even like at Virginia too, because they had to play the game in Nashville because of Hurricane Florence. So it's not like, you know, you can say that Ohio, you know, went into a raucous environment at Virginia, which I don't know if it's that raucous to begin with. But like it was a neutral site game and they couldn't do anything off. I mean, they couldn't really do anything defensively to slow Virginia down.
And they only had 13 first downs for the game. Only 364 yards. They like Virginia turned the ball over three times as well. So I guess turnovers would be something like to keep an eye on. Because we haven't really seen the Bearcats offense turn the ball over either. At least so far this season, they've kept the ball pretty safe and sound.
Right.
But yeah, Ohio, I mean, Ohio definitely like doesn't look as good as they have. But like I guess the thing with somebody like Ohio is that like with a coach is like as good as Frank Solich. Like if they put in the work, like they know how big a game this is, like a true road game at Cincinnati, you would expect them to like step up their effort like greatly and like pull out all the stops to try to take down UC.
Oh yeah, no doubt. I think Frank Solich is going to have him up for this game. I definitely think it can be a dangerous game if UC doesn't play to their capabilities. Like, you definitely got to keep an eye on the offense, especially the passing game. I mean, I don't know what they're going to do with quarterback, but they've got two talented quarterbacks, apparently. I mean, got to keep an eye on Malik Irons and AJ, I'm going to take a stab at this, Ouellette, if he's French. It starts O-U-E. I want to say Ouellette. Anyways, senior running backs, Irons is averaging 4.75 yards on the ground. Ouellette's averaging 3 yards on the ground. They basically split carries. Yeah, I mean it's an offense that can punish you and put up points if you let it. So yeah, UC shouldn't rest on their laurels coming into this game. I don't think they will, just based on what we've seen this season. I mean, they didn't sleep on Miami, Ohio. They didn't sleep on Alabama A&M. I don't see them taking a game off against Ohio.
I don't either. And like with as bad as Ohio's defense has been, they got like gashed against Howard. Howard like had over 500 yards, over 600 yards of offense on Ohio. Like that's the type of thing that makes you wonder like where they are defensively. It's like if they're giving up 600 yards to Howard and like over 500 to Virginia, it's like that's a defense that can be exploited. And we've seen some big plays out of the UC offense in every game. Like they've had explosive plays. So like this is a defense you can exploit for big plays, and hopefully we see him continue to happen.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, they should be able to put points on this team. I mean, I have them winning like 38-24. Like the over under is like in the 50s. They're an 8-point favorite roughly. I have them winning by two touchdowns.
Yeah, are you surprised that the spread, like the point spread, opens at 10 and it goes down to 8? Does that surprise you at all? Or do you think like some people are a little like hesitant about UC being that good so far?
I feel like that's kind of like how it happens usually. Like, isn't that how it usually happens? It usually opens higher and then kind of comes back down to earth, right? I don't know. I don't gamble. I mean, if I do, I'm terrible. But like, isn't that kind of what happens usually? Especially with like really wide point spreads.
I guess it depends on what team it is.
I guess. Yeah. I don't know. Like I said, I'm looking at like Virginia Louisville this week. It opened at 3.5, now it's up to 5, so I don't know. I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm a little surprised, and I guess it kind of makes sense because UC hasn't really given the betting gurus that much to look at offensively, that the over-under is in the 50s. I thought for sure it would be in the 60s.
I guess like you see like really didn't break out points wise until they played Alabama A&M. It's like whether or not like they only scored 21 points against Miami. Then it's not like they hung like 50 on UCLA either.
Yeah, and I guess like maybe that's to UC's defense's credit. Maybe they think that Ohio's offense is gonna get stymied and stay in the teens or something like that. I don't know. I don't follow this stuff, so.
Yeah, that has to be like the rationale. It's like if you think it's got to be like they think UC would beat them. I don't know, like 28 to what's this point spread 10, 28 to 18, or something like that to stay under the over under. I don't know how those work either. So that over under in that one opened at 57, and then it went down to like 54.
Yeah, I don't know. I still have them like 38-24. So what is that? Like 62 total points, something like that. I don't know. That God, Scott, that Ohio defense is terrible. Just awful. Like my rationale is if you're an Ohio defense, and I don't know, I haven't watched a lick of Ohio games this year. I'm just basically going off of the numbers. But if you're a bad defense, you typically try to play more of a softer zone and try to just keep everything in front of you. You want to just kind of prevent big plays. But Alabama and A&M did exactly that against Cincinnati on Saturday. They played a soft zone defense, and Jason Jackson and Khalil Lewis were running wild in that secondary. Like if Ohio plays a soft zone, UC is just going to do exactly what they did against Alabama A&M last Saturday. If they play man, I mean, that's going to definitely put a little more pressure on Ritter to, pick the correct receiver in his check down. But it's also going to give the running game more opportunities because receivers are going to be focused on, I'm sorry, defensive backs are going to be focused on receivers running downfield. So I don't know. The defense is just so bad. I don't know if UC doesn't have, I mean, not a 63-point game, but I could see them scoring 30 or 40 points on Saturday.
I could too. Maybe not in the 40s, but I could see them definitely scoring in the 30s. I think the spread is too low, and I don't really buy Ohio's defense. But I do think it will be like a pointsy game. So I'll say it'll be like 35 to like 24.
Yeah, I have 38-24. I'm good with that. I think that makes sense just from what we're seeing. A
So
lot of people are like assuming like I don't know, just from like seeing the replies, there's people who are saying like UC is gonna, is only gonna score like 28 points or like 24 points or something. I just don't see that. I just don't.
it could happen. Like obviously.
Like turnovers aside, yeah, but like if they keep the turnovers low, I don't know how this team doesn't get into the end zone multiple times. And maybe I just have recency bias, and definitely that could be, I can definitely see that. But it's just, I don't know. Ohio has a really bad defense, just so bad.
Yeah, and that's part of, like, what I'm leaning into as well. Because, like, Ritter looked pretty solid through the air last week. And unless, like, he completely falls apart, it's like he should be able to throw. And with, like, how the running game has been, with the first three games consistently, like, they've broken big plays in the running game every single week. It's like, if they can just keep the offense balanced, they should have no problem scoring on Ohio. I think where the interesting questions come is like when Ohio has the ball. Because like UC hasn't been up against a good offense all season long. Like UCLA's offense is terrible. Miami's is not great. And then it was storming. They threw the ball like 40 times. And there was no challenge last week. So they're up against a team that like has proved they can score. Even like in garbage time situations. And that can move the ball consistently. So, like, it would be a pretty solid challenge, especially for the secondary when, like, they have Ohio has, like, Poppy White, and he had a big game against Virginia. He's got 285 yards and 14 catches in two games. It's like, he's definitely a guy who can make plays. And it's a guy you have to cover.
Yeah, I mean, I still, this is going to be the biggest challenge for the defense to face. I mean, by far. Like, Miami was basically asking their quarterback to throw 41 times in a monsoon. They have no running game. UCLA is basically hit the restart or the refresh button on their entire team, offense included, after Wilton Spake went down. Alabama A&M. I mean, at the very least, Ohio has established players and playmakers in that offense. It should be at least, like, at the very least, like, ever since the UCLA game, one of the more intriguing games this season. And maybe, like, to our point earlier, maybe this is the litmus test.
Yeah, maybe it is, because it's, like, a solid team. Like, it seems like their computer numbers are trash. But like, it's still like a solid team on paper who like has a good coach, like has a good offense. Like their defense has been like pretty horrific, but they kind of like match in line with some of like the other teams in the league. Like their profile is like, I know UConn is terrible, but their profile is really no different than UConn, no different than East Carolina. And like those are teams in your division. Like, that you have to play, like, no matter what. So, it'd be like a nice test to see, like, where you see, as even improved since last year, since they lost to both of those teams.
I think, like, if they, let's see, what is, so Ohio's averaging something like 5 touchdowns a game. If they keep Ohio, like, in the 20s, I think we can safely bet that this team can hold most teams in check. Most teams' offenses in check. I mean, we're talking apples and oranges potentially between like an Ohio offense and like a Central Florida offense. But at least you know they can kind of prove that they can have their way with a decent offense. You know, regardless of who it is.
I guess if you're looking for, like, one telling stat, UC's offense by S&P is still, like, 105. So, like, if you're looking for, like, a reason to get upset, I guess that would be it.
Yeah. Yeah, the S&P is, it's a predictive kind of statistic system, but there's just not enough sample size between last season when UC was grotesquely terrible offensively and then this season where we've only played a couple of games and one of those games was in a monsoon and the other game was against an Alabama A&M team where they just did whatever they wanted to against. I don't know. This game might go a long way to really show what this team can do on both sides of the ball going into the season or going into the rest of the season.
Definitely, because think UC only had 230 yards against Miami, whose defense ranks pretty poorly. It's like it's going to be an interesting test. Like we both think they'll win, like, kind of handily. But this definitely seems like the type of game where I kind of think Ohio is going to push them in the first half a lot.
Absolutely.
Maybe Ohio goes up something like 17 to like 7. And like you like see what kind of team you have.
Yeah.
Or even like the reverse, like UC goes up like 17 to 7 or like 21 to 7. And like Ohio battles back. It's like it doesn't seem like this Ohio team would go down like that easily. I'm kind of willing to like write off the Virginia game partially because of the conditions that they played in. Like going to a neutral site with like 5,000 people there. But like at the same time, their defense was really terrible against Virginia. And I believe in Ritter. I think he can have a nice day.
Yeah, I'm kind of in that same boat. I trust Ritter so far. I mean, he's played in a hot environment in the monsoon, didn't really make mistakes. He lit up and overmatched Alabama A&M defense. I mean, he's done exactly what has been asked of him this far this season, if not more.
Exactly, and like
so,
I don't know what else you could what more you could ask for him from so far. I think he's like lived up to what people expect from like the quarterback position.
There's no reason to question him. Yeah,
definitely not.
I saw the game on Saturday. I don't know if he went, if he had a performance against Alabama A&M. I'm going to put a couple more touchdowns because he'll probably start most of the game or play most of the snap. But yeah, I don't. I'm Ohio'd out. Until next week.
Yeah, let's move on and like talk about the league a little bit. Were there any big surprises from the AAC this week?
Other than Temple?
Yeah, other than Temple smashing Maryland 35-14. I guess the biggest surprise to me was South Florida, like nearly blowing it to Illinois. They need an 18-point comeback in the fourth quarter.
But we talked about that. We talked about that, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. It's like the type of game that they should win, and then they like nearly blow it badly.
It's something about Illinois. Like, I granted they were playing at Soldier Field, so it wasn't in Champaign and on Illinois' home turf, but just that something about going to Illinois makes AAC teams do stupid stuff.
I feel like Illinois blew it like the most Illinois way, like a wide open 50-yard touchdown, like to lose the game with like under 3 minutes left. Just unbelievable. Like, are you buying USF as like a solid contender for the AAC East?
I guess I have to only because it's what? It's us, USF, and then Central Florida has only played a couple of games. So you have to, right? Just because they're undefeated and there's nobody else.
And like Blake Barnett's looked really good so far. He had over 400 yards in this game, like a game-winning touchdown pass. Like that.
Yeah.
Like their offense was like a big question mark with Flowers leaving, especially with like at the end of the year with how big a part of it he was. It seems like they found like a quarterback.
Yeah, there's definitely not. It doesn't seem to be as many concerns going from Flowers to Barnett, which is got to be encouraging for your South Florida fan, for everybody else. But you know, it was they seem to be on track. I mean, even with the turnover, they seem fine.
Let's run through.
I mean, one of the surprises for me this week was Houston. Did you see that Houston game?
Yeah. I have to admit, I was really surprised by that one as well. It's just like kind of like they were like in control of that game, it seemed, for a long time, and then nope.
Okay, that's good because I didn't, and I don't know. I don't know what I was doing. Probably entertaining in-laws or something, but man, I should have watched that game. Despite the Houston loss, which that's one of the surprises this week, because I think we both picked Houston. I can't remember. They were at least favored by a point, and then they got pretty blown out at home or on the road.
Yeah, it's like for like the longest time, it's like they took an early lead, then they just kept staying one up on Texas Tech until they didn't, and like Texas Tech, it seemed like made like 100 big plays, like their running back ran all over Houston. I was really surprised with how the Houston's defense kind of just like melted away.
I mean, I guess granted you're going to get that when you're facing Cliff Kingsbury passing attack, but like that just didn't look good at all. I mean, granted the offense was, I don't know, you're talking about an offense that was facing one of the worst defenses in college football, but it's just the defense did not look good at all. Like what are they going to do if they have when they have to face Memphis, or if they even get to the conference title game and they have to face like a Central Florida? Like, I would be really concerned if I was a Houston fan.
Yeah, I don't think you can have any game where you give up like a 600-yard passer and like
Yeah.
not worry. Especially like with how Memphis has like really proved like their offense is like sustainable,
Right.
and like they always seem to have a good quarterback. Like they put up 59 points on Georgia State. It's like with Houston, like now you have to worry about getting blown out in some of these games. And the AAC, like, offenses are pretty much, like, all, like, spread out, like, throw the ball deep type of offenses. It's like, it gotta be a definite worry for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Any other surprises on the week?
Tulane, like, lost to UAB.
Didn't I thought you picked UAB.
I think you picked UAB.
Okay, one of us did. I can't remember. It's not super surprising. I don't know.
But
Tulane's Tulane, I guess.
on the drive to six, like that was the win Tulane needed to have. UConn won a shootout against Rhode Island. SMU got blown out by Michigan. SMU was really bad. I stand
Yeah.
by that. I still think that was like a tolerable hire. I still believe that.
Yeah. I still have faith. I definitely still have faith in Sonny Dykes. I mean, like we talked about last week, it seems like basically Chad Moore has boosted up the roster to get him that Arkansas gig. Oh, and by the way, he lost to North Texas and got blown out by North Texas last week, so maybe SMU's better off. But I don't know. I still believe in Sonny Dykes. They're in a clear year zero there, like a full rebuild from the ground up. Yeah, UConn and Rhode Island. UConn probably should have lost that game. They were doing lots of nasty stuff offensively, but they did not know how to stop Rhode Island, which has got to be concerning if you're in the same division as Central Florida and South Florida. I guess you basically got blown out by Central Florida, so that's behind you. But you still have South Florida on the, in the windshield right there.
And like after how horrific they were against Boise State the week before, like yeah, that's just not good. Like their offense, their defense is really, really not good.
Yeah, they're fucking really terrible. Navy blew out Lehigh, no real surprise there. Arkansas State beat Tulsa. That's not too surprising, I guess. But Tulsa, when are they going to be good again?
That's a good question. I'm sure Tulsa would like to know that as well.
Well, I mean, Phil Montgomery, like, so what year is he in? He's in year four. And he's coming off a 2-10 season, and they're 1-2, and they play in the West, and they're not going to go bowling.
It seems like they've taken like a kind of almost like a clear step backwards.
Yeah. They've got at Temple this week on Thursday. Houston, South Florida, they play at Arkansas. They got a couple of respites against Tulane and UConn. Then they have at Navy, at Memphis, at Navy, and then against SMU at home. There's no way Philip Montgomery survives that schedule. Like, they might win four games.
He's going to be on the hot seat for sure. I don't know if they would make a move this year, but going into next year, if they didn't make a move this year, he'd be in definite trouble. So, like, the one thing you can't do in this league is just be stagnant. Like, you have to be moving upwards.
Right. Absolutely.
It's kind of the weird thing about the AAC that it seems like people don't really focus on. It's like, there's so much pressure to win, and not just win, but you have to win big, or you end up getting booted out, because every single program thinks that they can win the league, and really, on the other hand, nobody wants to stay in the league either. That's everybody's trying to impress nationally. And if you suck, you're an afterthought, and nobody wants to be an afterthought.
No, I think it's a great mindset to have. I mean, it's a kind of Darwinian mindset that Power Five conferences have. These coaches are getting paid in the range of Power Five coaches. What, Fickell's making something $2.5 million this year? Wasn't Scott Frost making north of $3 million in the last season at Central Florida? Definitely pressure to win, and it's kind of unusual that Philip Montgomery has had as long as the leash as he had, because he had a couple of solid seasons as he was kind of establishing himself at Tulsa, and then the frickin' bottom dropped out last year where they went 2-10, and they're not looking much better this year. I can't imagine Tulsa has him on that long of a leash, especially when you're in the same division and you're staring at a Houston that is consistently solid. And you've got, Navy in your same division, and Memphis is good. The kind of the advantage of being in this league is that you can afford to fire a coach and have a pretty good shot at a solid replacement if you're willing to pay for it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And it seems like everybody pretty much has been willing to pay the cost to upgrade their coach.
Which is, that's exact. I want this league to treat coaches and programs and just the whole economics around being an athletic department in this league like any Power Five conference would be, because I mean that's just what it takes to be at that level. I mean, I know people joke about the whole Power Six thing, and I get it. It's kind of a joke, because it's like that nerdy kid banging on the prom window or banging on the window at the party of the cool kids trying to get an invite or trying to get in there. But it's that's just what you have to do. And even if it's just a slick marketing campaign, at least the AAC can kind of go out there and say, hey, yeah, we want to be like the Power Five, because we feel like we spend and play like that, and we should be getting the respect we deserve. And it's, God damn it, it's working. Central Florida went undefeated last year, and people all around the country were saying, why the hell is this team not playing for a national title? That's the kind of conversation that helps this conference.
And, just add on to the fact that, every, big power conference team that needs a coach, comes looking to the AAC first.
That too, yes. Yeah, and it's not like Purdue. Purdue went out and got Jeff Brohm, and Jeff Brohm is a good coach, but he was at Western Kentucky. If you're at a Nebraska, you're targeting Scott Frost. Now, Scott Frost has connections Scott Frost played quarterback in Nebraska, so that's kind of a no-brainer there. But, Texas went after Tom Herman. Texas went after Tom Herman. If you're a big program looking to make a quick turnaround, you go after the AAC first and foremost. I don't see many teams going after Boise State's head coach.
And it seems like he just doesn't really want to leave. But it's like if you just look like through like the teams, like UCF lost their coach to a bigger school. South Florida lost Willie Taggart. East Carolina like dumbly fired their coach to like ruin their program. Temple lost their coach to like a bigger program. So did Houston. So did SMU, and it's like so did Memphis. It's like almost every single team in the league has like lost their coach to a bigger program. And like even like Tulsa went out like made like a splashy hire with Philip Montgomery. It just hasn't really worked out. Like Willie Fritz was like an interesting hire at Tulane, and like who really knows how that's working out. Like it seems like they like him pretty well. And
And
like UCF.
the only head scratcher is like whatever the hell ECU's doing. Like, but I mean they're an outlier.
And if like UC keeps like on their trajectory, like Fickell's gonna be an interesting name this offseason. Especially now that like some like national people are like talking about UC as a East Division dark horse. Like if UC wins, like if UC wins the division, like beating both the Florida schools, like Fickell's name is definitely gonna be out there.
Oh, absolutely. If, I mean, we were talking about this last week. I mean, this team could very well be 8-0 heading into November. Like that's an insane thought to think to have considering where we were at a few weeks ago. But if they're 8-0 and they pull off a couple upsets and get to double digit wins by the end of the season, there's no way Fickell isn't targeted by a few bigger programs.
Especially,
I think he ultimately sticks around and plays for 2019 because who do they play in 2019? Ohio State. Don't you think Fickell's going to want to try to have a little bit of personal rivalry against his old mentor up there, assuming Urban Meyer survives the rest of the season? I think there's bigger danger of him leaving after 2019 if he has continued success. But, yeah, go ahead.
that is an interesting point. It seems like it would mostly depend on who came calling for Luke Fickell at the end of the season. If there was like no major job open, but it's like I think he would definitely stay. But like when that spotlight turns to November, like if you're undefeated, like you'd probably be ranked, you would think. Like there's a chance you could play, I don't know if Navy would actually stay ranked, but I guess there's a chance they could be ranked. Like, so you could play three ranked teams, and like two of them at home, if like South Florida stayed like consistent and kept winning. And like you go to Central Florida, it'll probably be ranked all season. Like three big kind of spotlight games. And plus like a potential conference championship game.
Yeah.
It's getting way ahead of ourselves.
No, so far. So yeah, the cart is just miles ahead of this horse. But yeah, I mean that is like think about where we were 3 weeks ago. Can they win six games? Maybe. Is the offense going to be better than last year? Maybe. Is the offensive line going to not be dog shit? No, it's actually pretty solid. Having this conversation on September 18th is just so much fun. I can't get enough of it. I'm so excited for the season. I haven't even thought about hoops, and I'm just shocked.
Yeah, it's like we made it to the third week of the year and like everybody's still focused on football. Like that's a good thing. Let's look ahead to this week in the league before we take off. Temple Tulsa, Thursday night game. Since ESPN is like I guess given up on Thursday night games and they put
Thursday
weird
night
like
has been, God, Thursday night has been terrible this year.
Like yeah, that's the ESPN game is Temple and Tulsa. Temple is a 7-point favorite. You see like their turnaround continuing after last week we questioned how good they were.
Yeah, it gotta go Temple, right?
Yeah, definitely. Like Tulsa doesn't just, I don't know. I feel dumb for believing in Tulsa after they almost beat Texas.
Yeah. Well, I mean, your head was in the right place, or your heart was in the right place.
Then my head was like, oh, maybe they're not bad. Interesting Friday night game as the AAC takes over ESPN this weekend. Florida Atlantic goes to UCF. UCF coming off a unplanned bye week due to the weather. They're a 13-point favorite. The over-under in this game is 73. And I kind of think that UCF could hit that by themselves if they really wanted to.
Yeah, this is going to be a really fun game. And that over-under is going to get destroyed.
Which way are you leaning? Do you think UCF takes care of business, or do you think FAU keeps it closer than predicted?
Yeah, are we going to get, like, UConn? Are we going to get, like, the UConn-McKenzie Milton, or are we going to get the South Carolina State-McKenzie Milton? I got to think we're going to get UConn, because, like, McKenzie Milton's proven to be pretty consistent, and, like, that South Carolina State game was a bit of a wonky one from him. Like, you don't really expect that most weeks. I think they take care of business. I think it's going to be, like, a game that, like, easily gets into, like, 80 total points. But it's going to be a really fun game. I'm looking forward to that.
I am, too. It's like UCF is definitely going to hit the 50s. And I don't know how good their defense really is. So we already previewed UC Ohio. Another new game, Navy at SMU. Does Navy keep it going?
Yeah, I think Navy wins. I think Navy, I seems like they figured it out. Like the first couple of weeks, I mean, we kind of talked about it last week. Hawaii looks just a complete juggernaut offensively, and they squeaked out a win against Memphis, but I still think they should have lost. But you know, they got things right against Lehigh. They got a bad SMU team they're going to be playing. I think they win. I think they win fairly easily. I mean, they're 7-point favorites. That seems about right.
Yeah, that does seem about right. I would maybe consider taking SMU with the points just because they're at home. But I'd still take Navy. Like,
yeah.
Both. Tulane goes to Ohio State. So good luck, Tulane. UConn goes to Syracuse.
Wait, you don't want to predict that one? Okay, UConn Syracuse.
Does UConn give up a lot of points to Syracuse, who scored 30 points off Florida State last week?
Syracuse is a 4-touchdown favorite. Yeah, I. God. Yeah, there's the rivalry factor here. You know, Randy Edsall has a lot of experience playing Syracuse, but it's gonna be ugly. I feel bad for UConn.
East Carolina goes to South Florida in a Saturday night clash. That's my preview.
Oh, are you asking what I'm predicting? Like where it was? Okay.
Yeah.
What's the next one? Texas Southern Houston.
Yeah.
Okay. What's the next one? South Alabama Memphis.
Yeah, the weekend.
Yeah, there are really, really bad games this week.
Yeah, not really any great games to close out the conference slate. South Florida is a 22-point favorite over East Carolina. Do you think they cover?
Yes. I still don't know if East Carolina is good or not.
That's why I'm going to go the other way. I'm going to say they don't cover.
Yeah. That's probably safe. Like, I'm still a little suspicious of South Florida. They've had one of the tougher non-conference schedules this year. I don't know. They should have lost against Illinois, probably. They played really bad against a not very good Illinois team. Like, if Illinois was at South Florida, they'd probably win by 3 or 4 touchdowns. Illinois is just that bad. But they didn't really step up against an Illinois on the road. I think they win, but I don't know if they score more than 22.5 points. So yeah, I think your mindset makes sense. I would take them, but by like 2 touchdowns.
Same here. I don't really buy into East Carolina, but I don't really buy into South Florida's blowout potential either.
Like, I feel like until they blow out a team that's not at the FCS level, I think they still have kind of close games in their future.
Same here. Actually, nothing is interesting about Memphis South Alabama except the over-under is 69 points. You think Memphis gets over the over-under?
Yes. Yes, sir.
Is there anything else you want to get to this week before we wrap things up?
No, I think this Saturday is going to be a good test for the defense. I still think that UC wins fairly comfortably, 38-24. I don't really have much else to say about that game. It should be a really intriguing one. It's on ESPNU. Hopefully some eyes can actually watch this game and see UC do what they want to against a fairly solid name brand team. I mean, Ohio is in the MAC, but I feel like nationally they're fairly well respected. So hopefully UC gets a little bit of national cred with their game this Saturday.
And Ohio's like one of those like perennial bowl teams.
Yeah.
Like beating Ohio, like may not be like the sexiest thing to do, but it's like, oh, they beat Ohio, like, as they should.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, now we ended on a positive note for once.
Yeah, and that's. I mean, this is going to be positive this season. This is going to be great. This is 8-0. We've got 8-0 in our headlights. I am really excited to see what this team can do the rest of the way.